And I'm joined by Helen Vaughan, psychotherapist with Minute Counselling, and Owen Tomás McDermott, Managing Director of the Communications Clinic. You're both very welcome. Good afternoon, guys.
Good afternoon.
Let's start with a story that is generating quite a lot of response, and indeed the Taoiseach is responding to it this afternoon as well. And this is the decision of the Rotunda Hospital to allow an RTE film crew, a small film crew from RTE, to film the hospital. And of course, there's been quite a lot of controversy in the last number of months that some partners have not been allowed in as mothers are giving birth. Helen, I want to come to you on this. And, you know, I've seen the Taoiseach's comments today saying that he doesn't think that it was appropriate. Where do you stand on this?
I agree. I think it's not appropriate. And I think it's an insult to all the women who've had to labour alone, have miscarriages alone, have awful news delivered to them, unknown that it was coming alone. And I don't understand how they thought it was a good idea. I do agree that, and I watched it, that seeing the hospital during a pandemic was interesting to see how it all worked. But I disagree with partners being denied entry. And I think that's the issue for any woman that disagrees with that, or any man or anyone that disagrees with that, to then see a TV crew roaming around talking to people. It just doesn't make sense. And even the Taoiseach agrees.
It's and we've seen in the last number of weeks as well, we've been told that, well, you can come in the areas of the hospital where it's much bigger and where there's ventilation, but you can't come into a hospital that's very busy. And yet you can have somebody going around with a TV camera at a time when everybody else is standing outside.
Well, and isn't the real issue that, to me anyway, it doesn't make sense that partners aren't allowed in, given that I don't know how many politicians and how many HSE people have said it's OK to come in. Everyone, 90% of people are fully vaccinated. And also when this was being filmed, no one was vaccinated. It started in November last year when there was no vaccination yet at all, yet the TV crews were allowed in then. Like, it's complete hypocrisy.
I can absolutely understand and agree why it would jar. And I think it is absolutely disgraceful that we can see that partners haven't been allowed in after the minister would have provided his instructions to the maternity hospitals that they should, yet there was still a lack of people coming in. I think there's a touch of this as well, though, when we look at it, that from this vantage point, I don't think RTE would have made the decision that they made. But this issue around partners having access has probably really started bubbling in the last 6 months, maybe the last 8 months, 9 months, whereas this, if you look back, was done and the decision around this was made almost a year ago at the beginning. So I can understand that first point, that first of all, partners should ideally be in there. I'm not sure RTE would have made the decision. But when we look at it, I tend to see it that there are probably, you could boil it down, that there are rules for the masses and then rules for the few. There are thousands.
Which is something that has emerged throughout COVID-19. And you can understand why now, that this is something that has gotten back into the headlines. And people say, well, you know what, when my partner was in there giving birth, I should have been in there too. Instead, we had a camera crew going in there. And I will admit, the RTE statement does say, for a limited amount of filming, one crew member, or on occasion, a compact two-person crew were in there.
And you see, I think you're right, Ian, and none of us want to ever see ourselves as part of the mass. We all see ourselves as individuals, so that when we reflect and say, well, why aren't I allowed to go in there? And then you would look at it perhaps from RTE's vantage point at the time of making it, where they're saying, we're sending one person in, probably a very carefully vetted person, probably tested very carefully. And then if you look at what they have suggested that they did the interviews, for example, in other offices, they recorded through fixed cameras. And that's the idea of what are we looking at our public service broadcasters to do. I think, again, you come back to say, from the vantage point that we have now, perhaps it wasn't the wisest decision. But they have said they wanted to hear the stories of parents and mothers during the pandemic. We will get access to that. They said they wanted to understand the impact on maternity services during the pandemic. I think we'll get access to that. They wanted to get a handle on what went on. I think we'll get a handle on that. So I think we can both agree that it is wrong that fathers or partners or whoever isn't allowed in with the mother, and also think maybe given the quality of the production, and I think we do have to acknowledge the Rotunda is a superb programme and
absolutely,
superb
public absolutely, broadcasting. But the issue here still is that we've moved on. We have had now, 90% of the adult population vaccinated, and there are still a lot of partners out there who say, I'm being restricted from going into a maternity hospital at a vital time for my partner to provide support.
Yeah, I have clients who've had multiple miscarriages on their own, multiple follow-up care on their own, and they feel alone and they're being traumatised by the fact that their partner isn't allowed to help and support them. And how can that continue? And you see a TV crew roaming around filming people to say, oh, how was your birth? I know it's not that simple, but it just doesn't
I think you see, I think we can agree, and then probably you'll disagree. I think you're like... there is the horrific cases. And then when we hear a film crew going in...
But they're
in,
normal cases. This is happening every day.
Well, yeah, I'm not denying that. But I think when we hear film crew, we imagine that there's going to be three lads with a camera, two with a mic and going in. Where it would appear, if you follow what RTE are suggesting, it was one person. I think, again, from this vantage point, they have made a mistake. But part of what they probably were hunting for was to apply the public service broadcasting remit that they have, which was to create educational, informative, insightful content in an entertaining way, which the Rotunda achieves. But I think we can still acknowledge from this vantage point the way that partners and mothers in particular have been treated during the pandemic and in recent times has not been appropriate at all.
Is there an issue, Owen, here as well, in which the way the Rotunda Hospital responded to the criticism previously, pointing out about some of the facilities in the hospital being of a Victorian nature, that you cannot have people just wandering around the halls in such a building where you cannot have ventilation. Is there an issue that they made a rod for themselves here with this?
Well, I think when you come out aggressively on any subject and put yourself in the firing line, that there is certainly, you do leave yourself out there for criticism. And I remember back, it's not too long ago, there were senior members from the Rotunda who were out swinging on what they were doing. When you analysed the advice from the HSE and Stephen Donnelly, it would have appeared that what was being applied in that maternity in the hospital was not consistent with what the guidelines were. I get that completely. And I don't want to be in a situation where I'm overly defending RTE, but I can understand both sides of it. And I think there is that element where when we hear camera crew, we think four or five, one person going in, interviews being done off-site, but absolutely, again, acknowledging the horrific experience that it must have been for many people.
Yeah, and we've had a message in on 0874100102 from a midwifery student in the Rotunda, saying there wasn't a single camera crew, all the cameras were fixed and there was one producer on site. Interviews were in external offices. Partners were never allowed in before women were in active labour. I think this one, though, Helen, might just run on a little bit.
Yeah, I think the issue is that partners not being allowed in is wrong, and that's the main issue. And that needs to be changed in every hospital. So there's consistency, rather than some hospitals allowed, some hospitals it's not. You know, and women need support in this time in their life, pregnancy or labour or birth, whatever it is. And that's what they're being denied.
Yeah. Now, I think we'll hear more on that story, as I said, Taoiseach commenting this afternoon. Now, I think this one, on Tomás McDermott from Communications Clinic, this is one you'll be playing for your clients for quite some time to come. Yesterday, the Secretary of State for Education in the UK, Gavin Williamson, found himself at the centre of a storm because in an interview he appeared to mix up Marcus Rashford, the Manchester United footballer, who of course has been leading an anti-poverty campaign in the UK, mixing him up with the rugby player Mauro Itoje, and his cabinet colleague Helen Whateley, who is the Minister of State for Social Care, was on with Nick Ferrari on LBC Radio in London yesterday trying to clear this one up. So we'll just get this clip for you guys.
To tell the difference between Mauro Itoje and Marcus Rashford, is he racist or incompetent?
You'll forgive him saying, I again have probably seen no more of this than what you have seen.
Well, what I know more do you? He's mixed up two prominent English black sportsmen. He's got them the wrong way round. I repeat my question: is this through incompetence or racism, Minister?
Honestly, I don't know. All I know is that Gavin has.
So it could be racism.
He's put out his explanation, and there's really nothing more that I can say about it.
So it could be racism.
I can't believe for a moment that he is. I think that sounds highly unlikely, and I think
so. So it's incompetent.
No, I think that's no. I think it's a.
Well, it's got to be one or the other,
really,
hasn't it?
No. It's not necessarily one or the other.
Oh, come on!
You've given me a false choice. That you're trying to put me in a trap to say that there's
how
one
dare
thing or
you,
the
as
other.
As if I try and do that. All the years we've known
as if a journalist would try and trap a politician. I don't accept the choice that you've offered me there. What I'll say is, Gavin has said what's happened. There's not a lot more I can say.
Nick Ferrari on LBC clearly enjoying that. Owen, she's fallen into the journalistic trap there. But this is awful for Gavin Williamson, who's already got, I think his reputation is not exactly rising high in the UK at the moment. How do you find yourself in that situation and get out of it?
Well, it's very, very difficult for Gavin Williamson. I think if you go back to Helen Whateley for a moment, I think Nick Ferrari, as we know, as listeners to the show, is a gifted broadcaster and gifted contributor to The Last Word. And he did a journalistic technique of giving them an option where her answer should have been neither, I'll refer you to his statement, yet she dithered her way through it. So I think you could say she in herself showed herself to be incompetent in being able to nail an easy enough question to go through. But yeah, Gavin Williamson is the Education Secretary, mired in mistakes for the last while, and somehow he mistook or mixed up Marcus Rashford and Mauro Atoje, who is Marcus Rashford, the English footballer, Mauro Atoje.
Very famous footballer and very well known for his political campaigning.
And it's what
against
what's,
the government and the secretary and
almost,
the education department.
The fact that he mixed up both men is incredible, and there is some element of, I would argue, latent racism that goes along with mistaking two black people, but also the issue of that he couldn't actually acknowledge who he was talking to on what subject. The journalist asked him, did you speak to Marcus Rashford about school meals? To which he said, yes, or yes, I had a conversation with him. He was a very engaged person. It in fact turned out that he had never spoken to Marcus Rashford, that it was Mauro Atoje he had spoken about, and Atoje's issue is around access to laptops. So the subjects were completely different. It was like, is this person even awake in the meetings that he's going in? So Gavin Williamson has a whole host of incidents. Boris Johnson was due to do a reshuffle yesterday, I think, but he has somehow managed to pause it. So it is thought that Williamson may get demoted in coming days.
Helen, looking at this with your current employment hat on and with your previous employment hat as a journalist, what on earth was going on? And it's just embarrassing all over that his advisors had to ring back up the journalist for Gavin Williamson and say, actually, it was Mauro Atoje. Mauro Atoje even made a joke about that himself. And then you have his colleague trying to dampen the story and said, well, I don't think he's a racist.
I feel like it's just getting worse and worse. Every person that speaks about it just makes it even worse or bumbles their way through it. And even the footballer and the rugby player have both spoken or tweeted about it and kind of are making jokes about it. And it's such a huge mess. I don't know how you get out of it. Although, to be fair to the minister, he did say he made a genuine mistake, and he did, but it's just hugely embarrassing. It shows you're not on top of detail. You can't even tell the difference between two different people. Like, that's just
silly. Also a thing where we could say it's also not just people, it is two black people, and that issue of making the call there, I think, is again wrong, and that we just have to call that out, that maybe it was do we believe that Williamson is a bad person? No, but that idea of unintended racism coming through, I think, is something that we have to call out, because again, they are both physically very different men. Marcus Rashford is 5'11" and 12.5 stone. Mauro Atoje is 6'4" and 17 stone. They are physically different. The only common thing about their appearance happens to be the colour of their skin. So we can let that slide and say, yeah, it is a genuine mistake, it might have happened with white people, but actually there's more to it, and that idea of we can't tell the difference between black people has to be called out as nothing more. Maybe it is unintended, but there's an element of racism to
it. And this is something that has stuck to the Boris Johnson government, that perhaps there are people in the party, the Conservative Party, who have a problem with race.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper,
weekdays from 4:30 today.
I just want to move on now. Let's cast our minds out of Ireland for a little bit and over to Venice, where it would be very nice to spend a holiday if you're allowed in.
Yeah, if you pay the charge. But I don't know. I visited Venice a long time ago. Basically, the story here is that they're asking tourists to pre-book their visit to Venice, a city, on an app.
And they're monitoring you if you don't.
Yeah, they're watching CCTV cameras, 468 CCTV cameras. So they're looking to see who is a resident, who's a visitor, obviously who's Italian, who's foreign, but also who paid and who didn't. Who goes through all the people and whether they paid and whether they didn't? Although I have to say, I went a long time ago and I found it too crowded. So the idea of fewer people being there is appealing, but this just seems very Big Brother
and
style.
And the charge is somewhere between €3 and €10, depending on the time of year. But we have seen the authorities in Venice trying to limit the number of cruise ships. And we also know they are going to have an issue down the line with climate and the rising water. So are they trying to deter people, or is this a revenue raising opportunity?
It may be both, Ian. And I think they are well within their rights to do with their city whatever they care to do with it. I think if you look at it in some ways, Venice is like Disney World. The vast majority of people go to Venice. It is an older, more beautiful version of Disney World, but the vast, vast majority of people go to Venice to have a gawk and look around and say, isn't this beautiful? So that the idea that the city officials may be observing crowd behaviour, may be observing where is getting busy, the water levels, they have a whole series of different analytical things going on, and then charging people to come in, I think makes perfect sense. And if they can monetize it, they are well within their rights to do so. And I actually think think it's a very interesting and probably not that bad an idea, and maybe perhaps Dublin City Council could reflect on something like that as well.
I think as well, though, is it the intrusion of it? Like, again, if you pay on the app that you're quite happy to lock, but it's the idea that you've got all of these cameras and sensors and monitoring your phone tracing. Like, it doesn't feel very much like a holiday if you're told, well, you're not really wanted around here.
But again, is that what it's saying? It's saying, but it's not that we don't want you, we just want your money. So carry on, just give us some cash before you do.
But Disney do exactly the same thing. That's why I found it was very interesting. There's cameras everywhere in Disney. They give you an app that allows you book in your rides, but also clearly tracks you to see where you are in the park. It just struck me that Venice is an adult, beautiful, older version of Disneyland, populated with tourists, and they have decided to monetize it and to manage crowd control. It sounds like it makes sense to me.
I'll get in trouble for this, but if you really want to see Venice, there's the Venetian Hotel in Las Vegas, which I stayed in many years ago and had all of the same attractions.
It's not the same, though. Come on.
Let's move on a little bit now. Helen, you want to talk about McDonald's and its plant burger, because, of course, they're going to be launching the McPlant in Ireland next year.
I think it's the name of this that irks me the most. The McPlant. Who wants to eat a McPlant? I'm a vegetarian. I'm not a vegan. I don't want to eat your McPlant purely because you've named it that. But it's McDonald's first plant-based burger. And to be fair, they're fairly late getting on this train, because the vegan thing has been rumbling
KFC,
along. It's been
burger
huge
thing.
For years. I don't know. I can't get past the name of it. But they did say, though, that it's cooked separately from other burgers, which as a vegetarian I appreciate, and sandwiched using dedicated utensils, which I also appreciate. I've been to many barbecues where you see someone put the meat tool onto the veggie burgers and you're just like, please don't do that. But I think McDonald's a little bit late to the game on this.
If you are vegetarian or vegan, though, do you really want to go into McDonald's for something that's not quite a Big Mac?
Well, maybe you do, because maybe you have missed the wonders of a Big Mac for the years that you have been vegan. I think it's an interesting combination. They're working with a crowd called Beyond Meat, who are one of the leading organisations.
Huge company and selling an absolute enormous amount in supermarkets.
Totally. So, and a plant-based leader, and a leader in plant-based. I also think it's probably a strategically good move, because that market is now growing, the vegetarian, vegan desire to eat in it. And perhaps they have some investor responsibilities around ESG. The environment, society and governance that they have to hit as well. I also think on the food side of it, it is interesting. There used to be a kind of an exclusive, unique and very special capacity and ability of making things taste like another thing. So El Bulli, the restaurant, used to do it. We saw Heston Blumenthal do it, and it really was exclusive. Now we have McDonald's doing it, making it common and everywhere. And I think it is again showing that we have hit in some ways an apogee of the food wave, or the highest point of it, and this is a realisation of that movement that El Bulli started.
Yeah, I just wonder though, if people who are vegan and people who do want this, whether you're more likely to do it at home rather than go into McDonald's, where you think, well, I could have the other thing if I was so tempted.
No, I think you want the option. Like, I went to McDonald's once, asked for a veggie burger, and I got a bun with salad in the middle and nothing else. And I was just like... Like, that's the kind of stuff you would have gotten that was a good 10, 15 years ago. The McPlant's got to be better than that.
Owen, I know you want to talk about the firefighting goats out in Howth. Go on, you've got about a minute.
Well, sure, as a Fingallian myself, it's great to see that Fingal County Council are doing wonderful things.
I would say they're not coming out of fire engines now with hoses.
No, this is 25 goats that are being let loose on Howth Head that Fingal County Council have combined with they are the Old Irish Goat Society. They're going to have a goat herder, dogs, and really the objective of it is to reduce the likelihood of forest fires, and that this will enhance biodiversity, because there were animals and livestock on Howth Head until the 40s, and Hans Visser, who is the biodiversity official in Fingal County Council, has said there is a clear link between the disappearance of livestock and the decline of heathland on Howth, and that restoring heathland will reduce the likelihood of wildfire. I'm glad again to see such innovation happening in North County Dublin, and obviously again given the proximity of posh houses to the gorse, you would hope that there won't be any gorse fires in Howth in years to come.
Fire fighting goats, we've had it all now. Just coming up before 5 o'clock, Owen Tomás McDermott and Helen Vaughan, thank you very much for joining us.
Last Word with Matt Cooper,
weekdays from 4:30 today.